I was sort of engaging in a pursuit of my limits to see how I would handle being in the darkest place that I could possibly get in.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is a very special bonus episode with our guest, Bryce Young. Bryce is the founder of Bryce Distillery, a Franco-Swiss inspired absinthe distillery located in Missoula, Montana. From farming to firefighting to filling your glass, listen in as Bryce shares the ups, downs, and lessons learned while becoming an absinthe distiller. Bryce, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Now, Bryce, we were introduced by Mary Sheen, author of Present Yourself in Public Speaking and Public Speaking Coach. I believe the two of you were in California for a taping of the Bruce Lee podcast.
That's right. Yeah, both of us participated in the Bruce Lee podcast challenge,
yes,
which basically consisted of going through 2 weeks of sort of a personal development challenge. It involved journaling every day. It involved trying to go 2 weeks with no self-negative thinking and letting other people be, which is a lot harder than you would think it is. And both of us journaled about this and submitted our journal entries, and we both won an interview on this podcast, and a lot of people got phone interviews, but Mary and I, who were recording back-to-back in the same hour, we actually both flew out, Mary from Boston and I from Montana, and we met there and just sort of connected briefly and then followed up a couple months later.
Did have the chance to check out the Bruce Lee podcast, which I absolutely have now fallen in love with. So thank you for that introduction to the Bruce Lee podcast. And listeners,
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, no, I thought it was outstanding. And listeners, if you haven't had an opportunity to check out the Bruce Lee podcast, I suggest you do that. And Bryce, your story was so compelling that I was super excited to have you come and share it with our audience. So
Sure. What
we'd love to do, though, is, you know, before we go ahead and dive into that story of your building out your business and branding yourself, we'd like to kind of rewind the clock just a little bit and have you tell us a story of how it is you thought life would be like, you know, what it is you thought you would be doing in the future when you were a kid or a teenager, and, you know, an aunt or an uncle would ask you, so what are you doing? What are you thinking about becoming when you're an adult? What would you reply to that question?
You know, I don't think I'm unique in saying this, but as I grew up, I wanted to be a paleontologist because, like all little boys, I loved dinosaurs. And diving into the sciences later in life, I just realized that wasn't my thing. And I ended up going through this phase, and I think a lot of us probably do go through it. But for me, it was one of the more impactful phases that I went through, and it was sort of embossed by this notion that you can either be happy or you can be financially successful, and there was sort of no in between. And so I was of this mindset that I don't care how much money I make, I don't care, you know, what my life is like, as long as I'm happy. And I think that you can be poor and be happy at the same time. Try saying that when you go to the grocery store to buy a jar of peanut butter and an orange, which is your only groceries for a week, and you can't afford the orange, you know. So at that point, there was sort of the transition where I thought, I don't care how miserable I am, I need some money right now. And so I started working and earning money and sort of buying into the notion of capitalist society, and I fell in love with it because I realized that you can be so much happier by participating in the business world, because business is how people relate to one another. It's how they support one another. If we didn't have business, if we didn't have people doing things for one another, all you'd be doing is spending your days gathering food. You'd just be focusing on surviving. Right. I mean, business is how people provide to the world around them and enable everybody else around them to flourish in the best way. And that's sort of what that developed into from I don't care what I do. I just need to make some money, or before that, I don't care how miserable I am. I just want to be happy. There's really no choice to be made between the two.
What else do you feel you were doing to help yourself get through that moment?
When I was homeless, it was somewhat intentional. I wouldn't say that I fell into... I didn't fall into drugs or mental illness. I didn't get fired from a job. I just did sort of a Chris Chandler, Alexander Supertramp, into the wild sort of thing, and just left and burned my money and cut all ties. And I was sort of engaging in a pursuit of my limits.
Gotcha.
To see how I would handle being in the darkest place that I could possibly get in, and in order to experience that, you really have to put yourself in that situation. And I don't want to give the impression that it was a fake situation for me by any means. I really did get into a pretty bad place. As far as getting myself through it, financially, playing the guitar made me enough money to eventually, earn more money for groceries. Mm-hmm. I started working on farms in exchange for room and board, mm-hmm. which helped me a lot. But as soon as I had that money that I earned from playing the guitar, I knew that I could fly home at any moment. But I kept giving that money away because I felt like there was something else I needed to find. And I think that relates a lot to the entrepreneurial mindset is in order to run your own business, and for those listeners who have done this, you know that there are a lot of similarities between endurance sports, for instance, and running your own business. It's sort of this idea that that strength comes from toil, and that you have limits that are beyond what you know of yourself. Mm-hmm. Even in that time of homelessness, I didn't die, so I never found the limit.
Right.
And same with endurance sports. I ran cross country in high school, and I was pretty successful in that. But I still look back and think that I probably could have pushed myself a little harder and probably could have done a little better. And for that reason, I sort of loved homelessness. I sort of loved the simple aspect of it, and that it just sucked, and I had no desire for it not to suck, and that's sort of a strange thing to explain, but a happy place to be.
I guess it's difficult, of course, to completely engulf and understand until you've put yourself there, but I find it fascinating that though it was choice, I grasped that it was a time of need, and in that time of need, there was still nothing more than realistically a thought of how to move forward, how to push yourself further, and how to give back. So a true entrepreneur at heart. It sounds like the journey was kind of the way your journey needed to begin as an entrepreneur in order to move yourself in the directions and the growth areas that you wanted to be able to make. What do you feel like?
Absolutely,
definitely.
Yeah. If I could put a plug in there, as far as the transition into entrepreneurship, the thing that drove me away from homelessness wasn't the need for things. I was, anything that I was getting from other people. And I was playing music on the street, so, you know, you could kind of say, like, oh, I quote-unquote earned that money, you know, you're giving music to the public. However, it didn't feel like that. It felt like a lot of taking. And so the mindset that switched was that I didn't feel right taking. I'm very much a believer in karma. And I felt that once I got through that time in my life, I needed to give back. And so that is what led me to the commitment to start my own business.
I love that. When you, once you decided that it was time for you to start your own business, once you decided, I mean, you're literally in a position where you're struggling, but still considering, you know, giving back, moving forward, learning and growing for yourself. You know, you were working on gaining the necessary skills and knowledge that you needed in order to build out your business. Once you got to that place, what do you feel like were some of the first steps that you took once you decided, okay, now I'm going to go ahead and build out the distillery? What do you feel like were those first steps?
I found somebody who knew how to do those things, mm-hmm. and that I think that a mentor is something that is extremely useful. I don't want to go as far as to say 100% necessary,
mm-hmm.
but it was really helpful for me for that mentor to keep me on track and say, okay, before you take this next step, you have to finish your business plan.
Mm-hmm.
That was step one. From the business plan and the mentor was just all of the necessary paperwork, because when you, the business plan is the first step, and the business plan is your gateway to the next steps, because how do you know where you need to go if you don't at least have a path that you're on,
right,
of some sort. Otherwise, you're sort of at an intersection, and you're trying to take all paths at once. Writing the business plan is 100% necessary, I think, for the very beginning of your business. You mm-hmm. need the idea down. And the way I would go about doing that, for advice to anybody who's thinking about starting their own business, whatever business you're starting, just Google that. So mine was distillery. I Googled distillery business plan, and I found some free some business plans online for real distilleries in America that you could pay a certain amount. It was probably like $10 or $20, and you could just have this business plan and sort of use that to as a template to develop your own ideas. And through that process, you will gain a much clearer conception and more precise idea of what it is exactly that you're trying to do.
Definitely. I love that. Clear, concise, actionable steps that, you know, someone who may even be thinking about it, and that's really what the audience consists of, are those who are looking to jump into an entrepreneurial journey, or those who are just kind of starting out, or even those who have been on an entrepreneurial journey and are just kind of looking for a new business idea. So I love that, definitely. It's really that simple in terms of developing or starting that development of a plan. You can easily go to Google, search that type of business and business plan along with it as those keywords to find a sample of some sort that you can then utilize in the future to get your start there. So definitely finding someone who knows what they're doing, who has been there before, that can help you figure out the way, and creating that plan for yourself, you know, not just for the business, but financially, so that you know exactly how you are planning to pay the bills with this business is extremely important when you're starting off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. What do you find was the most difficult part of becoming an entrepreneur? What do you think, you know, was the largest hurdle that you had to overcome, and how do you feel you did that?
So that's a really good transition question from writing the business plan. The most difficult part of becoming an entrepreneur for me, and I think for a lot of entrepreneurial types, is distractions and brain fog, mm-hmm. is minimizing your squirrel moments. Mm-hmm. Oh, squirrel, look at that over there. I'm going to go run after that. And actually being able to get a hold of your ideas and ground them in something that you can build, rather than one day you're thinking, I really want to create an international space station that's going to be sent into deep space and a whole society can live in there. Mm-hmm. And then the next day you're thinking, no, I want to make a whole orchestra of instruments that can be played underwater and we can have a concert. You know, you're having all of these ideas. But once you decide to focus, it's a decision. Once you decide to focus that creative energy on something, you'll find so much more freedom in those creative ideas and that creative energy. So as far as being able to focus, I definitely have some very solid things that I do. So every day is a challenge to find stillness and focus for me, which are, I think, an entrepreneur's greatest tools are mm-hmm. stillness and focus. With meditation and a lot of perseverance and a good idea of what your priorities actually are, mm-hmm. you can do this. So as far as priorities, before I go to bed, I think of what I'm going to do tomorrow. I think, what's the first thing I'm going to do tomorrow? And I'm not talking grocery shopping. I'm talking big things. Okay, mm-hmm. tomorrow I'm gonna submit my application to the Tax and Trade Bureau for my distiller's permit, you know, or at least I'm gonna work on it. And then I wake up in the morning and I think that same thing. I recall that item that I have to do that day. And that keeps your priorities in check. If you're ever ho-humming about things that you're working on, you're not really sure what your priority is, sit down and write them down. What is it on your mind? Just blurt it out. You have 1,000 thoughts at any moment. Put them all on a page in a bullet point list and say, okay, is submitting my application to get my distiller's permit more important than going to Target and buying that candle that I've been thinking about? You know, yes, it is. So I'm going to cross out the candle and just put it down to like one or two priorities at a time until you have both those priorities done. This is just one tool. There are a thousand things that you can do to help yourself maintain stillness or even acquire stillness if you don't have it. But really, it all has to do with committing that to yourself, because once you commit to yourself and tell yourself, okay, I need focus, I'm going to focus on this, I'm going to dedicate my creative energy to this, then your life sort of adopts that. It's not a pill that you take. It's not a prescription that you have. It's something that you have to bring into your life, you know?
It's habits.
It's habits that need to be built. You're committing yourself. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's habits. Habits that need to be built. Right.
Absolutely. Right. Habit has been extremely important to me. I find that when I don't do my morning routine, mm-hmm. which is just highly involved in getting into that, finding that mindset of focus, just touching base with it every day, and to start the day, just touching base with, okay, that is a focused feeling. I know that, because you lose that. If I go 10 days without doing that, it'll take me a few days to get back into it. And the longer you go without it, the harder it is to sort of train your attention. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, is your attention and your thoughts are not the same thing, and your will has power over your attention. And if you can find what your attention is, that's what you need. That's all it is right there.
Definitely. Focus and clarity. You know, having the clarity to understand what it is you need to focus on and then the clarity to then move forward and focus on that. Yeah, I think that's a really common problem for entrepreneurs across the board. I know it's something that I at one point was struggling with myself, and that's actually what sparked the development of the program Prism that I've created and work with a lot of my clients on. It's the first pillar in the program. Prism stands for Perceived Reality Inspires Successful Minds, because your perception of the day, your perceived reality throughout the day and what your focus is on can shift drastically if you don't have a way of maintaining that focus and that energy. So I think that is one of the bigger pieces that, can get in the way for others and can be, propel you forward greatly once you do master those two or begin attaining them even. So what do you feel like you have learned that you didn't know you were going to come across during this journey so far?
It's the relation of endurance sports mm-hmm. to starting your own business. I didn't know that they had so many similarities. Here's the big one, is that you have a goal, but you're relaxing and you're keeping your focus at the task at hand. So let's say there's two runners, and they're racing, and they're coming up to a hill. They're neck and neck, and they're competing with each other. Both of them come up to the hill at the same time, running, and one of them says, "Oh, God, I don't think I'll be able to make it up that thing." And the other one sees the top of the hill, and then they look down at their feet, and they say, "Just focus on your breathing, keep moving, big chest, big lungs, pump the arm, I can do this." Who's going to get to the top of that hill first? It's going to be the second person, because the first person is focused on what they have to do. "Oh my gosh, look at the top of that hill. I'm really tired already." And then, "Oh, I'm going to be so tired at the top of that hill that I'm not going to be able to beat this person. They're going to get ahead of me." Not saying that life is a competition. I'm just comparing two mindsets and which one is going to have a better time and which one's going to be more successful.
Definitely.
Have a goal, relax, keep your focus on what you're doing right now.
I love the way you explain that, and it made me chuckle as I was listening to you, because it made me think of my dad. What my dad tells me all the time? He's like, "Lori, you'll get where you're going. Just slow down. You got to look where you're going now or you're going to trip." And it's the same thing. Got to look where you're going right now or you're going to trip. Somewhere along that road, you'll get to the end of the road, but slow it down and focus on the steps that you're taking to get to the end of that road. Definitely 100%. Yes. So I love that. What do you feel like are some of the key metrics that, a newbie should really focus on when they're performing their initial research, their market research to get them started?
The initial market research is something that I tried to do offline. I tried to do it reading books, but the only thing that I found that worked for me is having boots on the ground mm-hmm. in the market that you're interacting in. So this might be less pertinent for somebody in different area of business. For me, I am starting an absinthe distillery. Absinthe is not an easy market to research.
Mm-hmm.
You can find people online. You can find groups online. You can read about it. But when it comes down to it, if you are selling absinthe to Chicago, go to Chicago, meet the bar owners, meet the distributors, meet people who drink absinthe, and just ask people, what is the absinthe scene like out here? How big was it 2 years ago? Is it bigger now than it was then? How has it evolved? Do people drink it traditionally? Do they, God forbid, light the sugar cube on fire? Do they make cocktails with it? What is it that people use absinthe for? And it differs from place to place. And if it's really hard to find that information online, a lot of things are available online. A lot of information is available online. But for me, that was the only thing that worked. And also, there's been some ancillary benefits that have come from that, such as I've traveled to all of these major cities with my product, and people know my product, and they know my face, and they know my brand now. It wasn't the intention to begin with. I was just trying to find answers. But I would say that is the most important market research that I've engaged in.
Definitely. Hands-on experiential learning. There's nothing better than, you know, when you have the opportunity to get out and do and see and, you know, speak to your audience, speak to your customers, speak to those who are going to be using your product or, you know, drinking your absinthe. You need to be able to get in front of those people and really have that opportunity to have hands-on experiential opportunity to learn. So definitely kind of diving in. Do you feel like there's a limit to the amount of research that somebody should do prior to really launching their product?
No, neither minimally or on the maximum end either. You can research as much as you want, but consider this in your startup. There are so many obstacles out there that are going to slow you down, mm-hmm. and you don't need to be one of them.
Right.
You've probably heard it before on, you know, other people saying it on, you know, articles or different podcasts. Get out of your own way.
Right.
Don't convince yourself that you need a degree in a certain subject in order to be successful. You know, medically, that has, like, if you're getting, you can't be a physician without your MD, for instance. So there are exceptions to that rule. But as far as entrepreneurship, get out of your own way. You need to trust in yourself that you will learn as you go, and you will learn as much as you need to know, because the obstacles that present themselves to you are the steps that you need to take in your success. And so all you need is preparation to face those obstacles, and you will learn to overcome those obstacles, and that is the knowledge that you need.
Definitely. Learning is growing. Tell us a little bit more about Bryce Distillery, where you're opening, things of that sort.
Okay. Bryce Distillery is a startup absinthe distillery in Missoula, Montana. It's inspired by French and Swiss style absinthe, because I went over there to learn how to make absinthe from some of the best distillers in the world. And I've come up with a product that is unique and authentic, and it does not make you hallucinate. That doesn't mean it's not authentic. That just means absinthe never made you hallucinate, and it never will. One longer is what people were drinking. I will hopefully be opening in March. We're undergoing build-out of the facility right now, and when we open, we're going to be a distillery that's really committed to supporting local economies, and that came partially from my sustainable food and farming background, and partially from the study of French and Swiss absinthe. It's the French and the Swiss commitment to their local farmers and to closing waste loops. For instance, taking the herbs that you've infused in the alcohol and then distilled it, taking the spent organic matter, their byproducts from distillation, and using it as compost in local farms or animal feed, things like that. That's really our focus. And the crowdfunding campaign that we're running right now is going to allow us to increase production with focus on those sustainable elements of the business, because every business in this day is a business of environmentalism. It's got to be incorporated into day-to-day life, and that's what we're trying to do as much as possible.
Excellent. I love it. A green distillery, a green absinthe distillery. So, Bryce, you are definitely our first distiller on the show, so thank you for joining us. What do you feel was really the key to your success with growing your business thus far and getting to the point of actually opening the distillery this March?
The key to success has definitely been my mindset of having this business as an anchor for my squirrel mind, as I sort of mentioned earlier. I have a lot of crazy entrepreneurial ideas, and being able to sort of take these ideas and say, does this apply to the distillery? Maybe down the line, maybe I can create a bunch of instruments for an underwater orchestra for the distillery down the line, but not right now. Let's maybe write that into the long-term business plan, you know, and let's focus my creative energy on, for instance, right now, developing let's just say painting the ceiling, you know. Okay, that's something that's a little more pertinent right this second, or a step further, putting my distillery on the blockchain. Developing this token that I've created, BoozeCoin, in order to track the supply chain and provide customer reward points and get into the cryptocurrency space with my distillery. You know, that's something I can do right now.
Right.
It's just that anchor. And I think if anybody out there is like me, you might be afraid that you'll lose your creative spirit if you decide to just commit to one thing. I was nervous about that, but I decided to try it out, and I've found so much freedom through dedication, because freedom without dedication, to paraphrase Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, freedom without dedication dissolves into arbitrariness. And to create meaning in your life, you need to dedicate your freedom to something, in my opinion.
Totally understand that. Bryce, what would you caution as one of the biggest mistakes first-time entrepreneurs tend to make as they, you know, kind of embark on their own journey or begin thinking it through? What do you think is one of the bigger mistakes most people run into?
That's an interesting question. You know, I know quite a few entrepreneurs, but I don't want to make a huge blanket statement, but here's something that I've observed that many entrepreneurs I know struggle with, including myself. If you're the type who's starting your business, you probably don't have trouble making yourself work. You probably have trouble making yourself not work. Mm-hmm. And that leads to a lack of balance with work and the rest of our lives. It's the trouble of not being able to take our focus from our work when it's demanded by more important things like our relationships and our physical health. I mean, how many times have you heard the term, you're working yourself to death?
Yes.
Yeah, you're working yourself to death, you're working your relationships to death, and what are you gaining from it? I'm not saying I know the answer to that, because mm-hmm. every person is individually, but truly, a person running their own business needs to ask, what am I gaining and what am I losing right now? If I could throw sort of a personal story in there, in March of 2017, my dad passed away, and it was around Christmas time of 2016 that I went down there to help him and my mom out, and it was the best decision I've ever made. Looking back on it, it was an easy decision, but at the time, when I'm in the middle of starting up this business, when I'm already working so much every day, and then I'm asking people, hey, I'm thinking about just kind of dropping all of this right now and going to spend time with my parents. Everybody's answer was, no, you can't sacrifice your own life, you know, just to help you know, people down there, they don't want you to do that either, you know, and that was true. My parents were like, no, keep doing what you're doing, and do what you need to do, and I really considered it, and I said, my dad's dying, this is what I need to do.
Right.
So I dropped it, and I moved down to Texas, and I was a caretaker for my dad for the last part of his life, and sort of support for my mom, who was taking care of him by herself as well,
mm-hmm.
and over, you know, the treatments, the hospitalizations, he sort of lost the ability to walk, lost the ability to really stay awake for that long, mm-hmm. Lost the ability to talk more than a couple words at a time. We made the decision to bring him back to his house in a hospice bed,
mm-hmm.
where one of the last things I said to him was, "Dad, I don't think you're gonna be around much longer, and I just want to let you know you're losing the ability to talk right now, and this might be the last conversation we have, and just want to let you know that I really love you." And that was indeed the last conversation we had. He closed his eyes for the next 2 days until all my sisters came. I had three sisters, and they all came to the house. They traveled from across the country, and we were in the room with our dad, and he had closed his eyes. He was starting to sort of fish out of water breathing, which is indicative of imminent death.
Right.
And somebody from hospice came over with a guitar, and he said, you play the guitar, right? I bet your dad can still hear. That's the last sentence to go. I bet he would love to hear your voice, you know, and you playing the guitar. And I said, oh, cool. So I played the only song that came to my mind, which was Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and I never really connected on a deep level, except this one time at my grandparents' funeral. I sang this song on the guitar, and my dad loves Pink Floyd, and he stood up next to me, and we sang this song together. So when I started playing this song, something amazing happened. He opened his eyes for the first time in 2 days, and he gasped, and he just sort of sat there and listened. And when I finished playing the song, he just stopped breathing, and his eyes were still open, and you could see his heart beating.
Yeah.
And it was about a minute and a half before he took his last breath,
mm-hmm.
and all of us were there for that, and it was truly a miracle. It was truly the most amazing way that he could have possibly gone, and my family was all there for it. Had I followed the advice of most people, I would be 6 months ahead of schedule on my business right now, but I would have never had that experience. My dad would have died alone. My mom would have been there, but she would be fearing now that her kids would never have come to her side on her deathbed.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be as close with my family as I am now. So that's the perfect example for me, and I try to keep that in mind all the time when I think I might be working too hard, and I just want to make sure that my priorities are my relationships in life.
Definitely. Definitely. You can create a to-do list of priorities and things that need to be accomplished, but making sure that one of those priorities that you may not even write down is family, is one of the bigger ones. What's important to me is family, and that's partly why I continue with this business, is so that I can have that time, that flexibility, and the opportunity to be with family. So if I spend all of it focused on the business in order to get to a point when I can have the time, I'll never make it. I'll never make that time. So it is, it's important to make sure that you have that balance as you move forward. So if you had a time machine, Bryce, and could go back, say, 10 to 15 years and tell yourself just one thing, what do you think that would be?
The people around you are the most important part of your life.
Definitely.
That's the advice I would give myself.
Definitely.
And it's a hard thing. It's hard. I could have used a lot of advice way back when, even yesterday, even today. But if you didn't go through what you went through, you wouldn't be where you are now.
Right.
You gotta come to these understandings yourself.
Definitely. Definitely. But Bryce, you've been outstanding. I truly appreciate you sharing your journey with the audience today. I'm curious, though, because of course the show is really designed to assist entrepreneurs with possibly coming up with an idea for new companies and industries that they may not have been thinking of. And so, of course, where the show is designed in this manner to assist entrepreneurs with coming up with that business, we'd like to know if, in fact, you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business right now, or the industry, the distilling industry as a whole, what do you think it would be?
Well, yeah, I think what you're talking about and what I hinted at was this putting the alcohol industry on the blockchain.
Yes.
That is something that if I could wave a magic wand and just insert the knowledge of writing that code into my head, and I would make this blockchain token that would be able to track all of my raw materials and products that I distribute. It would create tons of transparency in
Definitely.
my business. It would increase efficiency. It would cut major costs involved with time delays, unsatisfactory raw materials, contracts, paper shuffling, dishonesty being a big one. And if the whole food distribution system were to take this on, and this is really important, alcohol distribution is just like any food production and distribution system. There would be enough data in these blockchain tokens driving the ability to put food in the mouths of the hungry rather than in big grocery stores where there's money. Because that's where grocery stores go. They
Right.
go where the food is a commodity. They go where there's going to be money. They go where there's going to be the most little waste. That's the current model.
Right.
But with the blockchain, it would put food in the mouths of the hungry. Food would move faster. It would be wasted far less. It would have notably less environmental impact, and it would be cheaper for the end consumer. If I had a magic wand, I would change that right now.
Bryce, I love that. And I love that this was the idea that you had hinted towards earlier, because I was thinking to myself, this is a perfect example of why I developed the show the way it is has been developed. Because who knew that an absinthe distiller would come up with a way to end hunger? Literally. You have
Right.
developed an idea and a way that we feasibly could use big data and blockchain technology to end hunger on this planet. So, techie community, I hope you guys are listening and are understanding what it was that Bryce was just explaining. If not, I will be sure to put a link into a little bit more info on blockchain technologies for you with this post. But Bryce, you've been outstanding. I truly appreciate you sharing with the audience today. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
Yes, if you want to get in contact with me personally, my Twitter channel and my LinkedIn channel are the best ways to get a hold of me. That would be at Bryce Distillery everywhere. We're really easy to find, but tweet at me at Bryce Distillery. Find me on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/Bryce Distillery,
Awesome.
and I would love to hear from anybody. Especially somebody who wants to help develop that blockchain token. And if you are interested in learning more about that, you can go to brycedistillery.com/podcast. coin. It's a hidden tab, so you won't be able to find it through my website. If you go there, you give me your BitShares username, I'll send you 100,000 Booze Coin, which is a completely worthless representative token that I've made as sort of a start to this this crusade.
Awesome. I love it. So not only, you know, have you been thinking it through, but you've actually developed the Booze Coin itself and a way to begin this journey. So definitely, techie community, reach out to Bryce Young at Bryce Distillery on Twitter, LinkedIn, all of the channels. We will be sure to link to them through the show notes page. Bryce, you've been outstanding. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Lori. Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, and you had some great questions. And this is truly an amazing podcast that is benefiting the world in such an incredible way. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Techie community, commit to yourself and to the habits that you know you need on a long-term basis. Bryce, thank you again for joining us this afternoon and for sharing your time and expertise with the community. Techie community, thank you guys for checking out this very special bonus episode. Don't forget to head on over to the Indiegogo crowdfunding page. You can assist Bryce with his crowdfunding campaign. You can reach Bryce at brycedistillery.com. You can always reach him through our show notes page at technology-equality.com/Bryce Young. Thank you again for joining us for this very special bonus episode. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions. Enjoy the week.